Welcome to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. I am your host, Henrik Johansson. I am the CEO and one of the founders of Gemba. Gemba helps entrepreneurs and companies to turn their great ideas into awesome new consumer products. Please stay to the end of the podcast and you'll learn how you can be our next guest on Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. Let's do it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Innovator Insights podcast. This is the podcast where we talk to successful entrepreneurs about their journey, how they started with an initial idea and how they turned it into something that had a real impact over time. Traditionally, we talk to mostly consumer product entrepreneurs in this podcast, but today we're part of something exciting, a podcast-a-thon, which is focused on taking podcasts or asking podcasts to feature a nonprofit. So today is a little bit different. Our guest, though, is no stranger to startups and technology. So in addition to her nonprofit, she's also started and led several different technology-enabled startups. So super excited to have Kathy Kempf here today. She's the founder and president of Moja2, and we'll let her talk more about that, but they provide educational scholarships for children in developing countries. She also has a very successful career in tech space, building solutions to help nonprofits scale, and that's actually how we met in my last company, Boundless. So without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Kathy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We haven't connected in a while, so really excited to catch up on what you've been up to. So before we talk about Moja2, tell us a little bit about your background. You know, did you grow up in an entrepreneurial household? Did you always think you're going to be an entrepreneur? You have a lot of background in nonprofit. Was that always the path, or is that something that came later?
So I actually wanted to be a veterinarian growing up. That was my dream, which is why I have 5 rescue dogs and probably will be joining us barking at some point during our podcast recording. But my parents were like, no, you need to be an entrepreneur. That was like, they're like, we will not fund you being a veterinarian. That's not the path that we think is going to be most successful. So I went to UT Austin, and it was determined that I was going to go to the business school. So there are the dogs on cue. And I actually studied management information systems. You know, I was really interested in how technology could help, you know, the industry as a whole. And it started really evolving. We started using the internet and, you know, suddenly it became mainstream. And so when I graduated back in 99, I really wanted to make a difference. And I dedicated my career to working for the nonprofit space on the for-profit side, helping them with online fundraising. So everything that I've done is really around mission moments, making a difference, and whatever that mission might be regarding the organization that I worked with.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. So that's great. I talked to a lot of entrepreneurs, and it's interesting to see kind of 50-50 of people grow up in an entrepreneurial household, and that all makes sense, you know. And then there's a lot of people like myself, you know, my parents probably couldn't spell entrepreneur. We were never talked about, you know, it was just not an option. And that was part because we were in Sweden at the time, but then also it wasn't a thing. So it's exciting to hear that. So you worked with nonprofit, when did the idea of starting your own kind of emerge, and what was the origin story there?
So I actually was part of the Rotary at the time, and we had done this big fundraiser to fund a borehole that we were going to be building in Kenya. Okay. And I was really seeking purpose in life at that moment. And, you know, just work, seeking a title, seeking, you know, money. And I realized that I felt kind of empty. And so I was part of Rotary, building this borehole, trying to make a difference in people's lives, having access to running water. And so part of this fundraiser when we finished raising all of the money is all of us went to Kenya to see the water come out of this borehole. Oh, wow. At this children's home. And it was one of those life-changing moments. The whole village was there. Everyone is celebrating because they didn't have running water. And it was like the most simplest of things. But on a daily basis, they had to make a choice, feed the children, buy water from a neighbor. Hmm. right? Because there it was no running water in these rural areas. And so that was one of those moments that I realized that there's more meaning to life. There's more purpose to life. And I actually ended up meeting this young girl at one of the children's homes. And in my first world materialistic mindset, I was like, what is it that I can get you? Do you need a new pair of shoes? Do you need an outfit? Like, what is it that, you know, I can get for you that would help? And she's like, I don't need anything. Actually, I really would like an education. That was it. And so at age 14, they age out from free education provided from the government. And so at 14, these kiddos are left on their own devices to figure out and fend for themselves, you know, unless they have a children's home that would give them shelter. But they would either end up in a life of prostitution, a life of crime, doing very menial, you know, casual labor, but really no opportunities to be able to provide for themselves. And so I came back from this trip in 2012, and I was really touched by this story and realized how meaningless some of our worst first world problems are, right? We were like, I need a new car. I want to get the latest, you know, whatever this thing is. When people are really just struggling with, I want an education to change my life. I want to be able to provide for myself. And so at that moment, I decided to leave my full-time job and that VP title and decided to take 6 months to really start Moja 2, start the organization, lay the foundation, develop our partners in Kenya that we were going to work with to ensure that we had a sustainable program. And so here we are 13 years later, and we have thousands and thousands of lives that we've changed.
That's amazing. That's amazing. If you go to some of your earlier events and, you know, be part of the organization, it's wonderful what you do. So can you go into more detail on how you actually make that happen? What's the organization look like? Like, what's the scale of it? How many kids are you helping? What parts of the world?
So we work exclusively in Kenya. You need boots on the ground to be able to manage the day-to-day operations, have partner schools that you work with, different, maybe even companies that you might partner with to help give you employment for your alumni once they graduate. So one day, perhaps, we'll expand beyond Kenya, but right now it's Kenya exclusive. It really started out with, you know, the goal of we're going to be a very small operation, maybe provide education to 30 to 50 students. But we quickly grew, and we've really landed at about the 200 mark of concurrent students that we manage at a time. We don't want to have more than that because we realize that we lose our identity. And our identity is this boutique experience, a very one-to-one connection between a sponsor and a student. And so what does that mean? We don't want to be a Save the Children, a Compassion International that's helping, you know, thousands and thousands of kids around the world where you don't really know and this person that you are helping on the other side of the equation. So in our case, it's a one-to-one relationship, sponsor to a student. And that relationship is very real. So you can do letter exchanges. They send birthday cards to our sponsors, Valentine's Day cards, Thanksgiving cards. And then you can also meet them via video calls once a quarter. So you actually get to know them, understand, you know, how they're doing in school, what their hobbies are, what their challenges are. And then to make it even more real, we actually do a sponsor trip in April for 2 weeks where you can actually physically go and meet your student. We actually are taking 10 sponsors with us now in April. They get to go to the village where their student is from, meet their families, go to the school that they, you know, grew up in. And so the average sponsor is actually with us for about 8 years. And so that means they're with us through high school. We see about a 75% transition to university. And so they actually see them grow up from a 14-year-old that was very shy during their very first video calls to, you know, being, you know, in their early 20s and then actually starting careers. So we're really excited. We have about 50 alumni that have graduated and are now employed, providing for themselves. They started families of their own. And our program is actually now fully managed by alumni. We have no staff. We actually have 5 full-time employees in Kenya, and they're all alumni, and this is also a way of them giving back.
That's awesome. That's so great. What you pointed out about the alumni there providing the opportunities, because that's also really important, right? That it's one thing to go in and help, but then where does that go afterwards, right? If they have an education and nowhere to go with it, can you talk a little more about that?
That's actually one of the challenges that we were facing last year. We started having a lot of students graduate university, but there weren't a lot of employment opportunities in Kenya. So especially right out of school, the unemployment rate is actually very high because people are seeking people with experience and they don't want to go have to train someone who is, you know, fresh out of school. And so we actually, as an organization, invested in a full-time position that helps manage our alumni and help them identify job opportunities. So they are actually working on the ground, working with different companies, developing partnerships so that they can actually create internship programs for our students, give them job employment opportunities, and ensure that they're also working with not just, you know, a stranger that applies for their job, but someone who's come through a program that's vetted. Yeah. You know, we're a trusted organization. They know that our, you know, students are trustworthy. They have very strong values and ethics. It's someone that they can trust. And so we've invested in that, and we've actually found that we've been able to really identify a lot of strong employment opportunities, not just in country, but now with like Fever, for example. They're actually doing outsourced work for companies here in the US and Europe, because they actually have computers, so, and English being their first language, no reason why they can't be someone's virtual assistant from Kenya.
Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. That's great. And it sounds like you've taken great care in sort of designing the donor experience too, right? You're talking about the trips, you're talking about the one-to-one connection. I think that's something you see a lot in the nonprofit world that I think have kind of rub people the wrong way. The pictures of starving children, or, you know, caged dogs, whatever it is, that, you know, tug on your string. And it's all good. I mean, everybody needs help. But I think the question is, how do you provide help that actually makes a difference, that has an impact, right? Because if you just give somebody money, then okay, that'll feed them for a day or a month.
Right.
Then what happens after that? So it seems like you guys have really focused on that longer term impact.
Yeah, it's really about enablement, right? There's always a hand that wants to receive, but how do we actually think about it as empowerment through education to end the cycle of poverty? Because with an education, it's not a one-time thing. They suddenly can provide for themselves. They can then, you know, provide for their families. They can provide for their siblings that are back in the village, or their parents. And so it truly is that gift that creates exponential change, rather than that one-time event that, you know, will come and go, but tomorrow there's still that need.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. So talk a little bit about who are your donors. And it seems like that one-on-one experience is something that people crave. I know, I think that's why Kiva was so successful in the beginning, and kind of when people realized it wasn't really a one-to-one experience, they got a little backlash from that. Do you see that's something that really is, you know, equally fulfilling on the donor side?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we have about a 90% retention rate of sponsors year over year, which is unheard of. I mean, it is very, very high when it comes to retention rate on the nonprofit space. And it really is because we try to curate a very sponsor-centric experience. It's making sure that they're seeing the value of their investment. And I call it investment, not donation. Yeah. It's the value of their investment on an ongoing basis. How the kid is doing. Here's a video. You know, here's the kid's, you know, life cycle. Here's, you know, where they were, where they are now. Sending them videos, right? I mean, even in the economy where people are losing their jobs over the last year or two, our sponsors are still keeping their students. Why? Because they see it as, this is someone who's counting on me. this is someone who I've invested X number of years in, and I want to keep them in school and I want to see them succeed. And so when sponsors are having to make tough choices financially, this is something that they want to keep in their budget. And they might be looking at, maybe I won't eat out as much, and make sure that this is something that I'm able to retain. And so it really is about making sure that it's not just this donation acknowledgement that they're getting, but they can actually visualize who is the recipient and the impact of the life that they are making through their monthly gift. And I think that that's something that a lot of organizations sometimes struggle with, being able to really create that visual of tangible impact. And I think that's something that we've really done a strong job on, where 100% of a sponsor's donation goes to their kid. And we do other fundraising over the course of the year to keep the organization running and pay for other, you know, ancillary expenses. But I think that 100% impact, I think, goes a long way.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You can really see, feel the impact that you're having, rather than just sort of checking the box and sending money somewhere. It might make you feel better, but you don't really know where the money goes.
Exactly. Instead of seeing, you know, like we just had, you know, several students finish university, and, you know, our marketing coordinator in Kenya was sending videos to sponsors that she created from when the moment they signed up to be a Moshe 2 student at age 14, pictures all the way through high school, through university. And now they're actually, you know, sitting at their desk job, and you can see that transition and transformation, really, of what their investment did for this person. And so, you know, as much as it is an impact to this student and the recipient, it's an impact to the sponsor. Yeah. You know, they actually feel very connected to this individual. And it's not just during the sponsorship, but they are truly connected for life.
Yeah. And do you think it also has an impact on, you know, there's so much tension in the world going on. We're here in March of 2026. There's wars going on everywhere, and there's a lot of division. And in my experience, it feels like the more people travel, the more they understand and see other parts of the world, the more it makes the world a better place. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think it brings down these walls, right? And then we actually realize how much we're actually connected and one, regardless of our political beliefs, our ethnicity, our race, our gender. We're actually all human. And there's, you know, a lot of the same desires, needs, and challenges, whether you're in Kenya, Bolivia, United States, you name it. We all, you know, are really striving for the same things. And I think, you know, going to a country like Kenya, where there is so much need, and it is a, you know, place where you see such levels of poverty, you actually also put in perspective your first world problems. You know, some of these things that we think are so important, or even divides that you might have politically, you know, with, you know, friends or family members, those things become a little less important once you actually get to know someone who is trying to survive, is truly trying to put food on the table on a daily basis, trying to find shelter, can't feed their family, you know, are trying to just make ends meet and not living paycheck to paycheck, month to month, day to day. If I do not find a day job for today, my family will not eat. And then you realize what true need really looks like. And then some of these, you know, little problems that consume us on a day-to-day basis become much smaller.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. That's makes a ton of sense. Awesome. We'd love to talk a little more about your career outside of nonprofit and you know, you grew up in the technology. You know, when we met, Kathy and I, we actually worked together on a very large fundraising program, and we largely thanks to Kathy, we're able to innovate this program. And I don't know if we're supposed to say who it was, but I think that the fundraising was like $40 million a year. And 2-3 years after we came in, built a new solution, they more than doubled that. Do I recall that correctly, those numbers?
Yeah, they're in the $80 to $1 million a year in terms of their fundraising levels, and you know, a huge part to the work that we did in terms of you know, technical innovation, products that we knew that the consumers were actually interested in, and created that instant gratification. So it was a really phenomenal experience. I loved working with you on that.
Yeah, it was super fun, and we had a real impact, like tens of millions of dollars for charity. So how's that experience been from, you know, building technology solution for some of the biggest nonprofits in the world to then running a small nonprofit? What are some of the parallels you see, and what are some of the things that are just fundamentally different?
Yeah. You know, I think probably the biggest learning for me was on the for-profit side, I was really good at giving advice for how to raise money, but I never actually did it myself. And so being able to put myself in the fundraiser's shoes and figure out how to find donors, how to steward your donors correctly, what type of donor experience do they expect and deserve? How do you keep them engaged for a longer, you know, period of time? How do you really steward those major donors? I think I really came to appreciate how hard it is. And I think I was able to put in place some of the things that I learned on the for-profit side, but I'm able to now put what I've learned on the nonprofit side in the for-profit side and actually make, you know, even the products that I develop in my, you know, work setting with Nuclevis better for my nonprofits, because I'm playing on both sides. And now I have a better appreciation and understanding of how hard it is to ask for money to create those really optimal donor experiences, which are just not that easy to do. There's so much technology complications and donor turnover, staff turnover that you have to, you know, deal with on a day-to-day basis. And so it is very difficult. Acquiring new donors is really hard in today's market as well. I think there's a lot of skepticism around, are they a good nonprofit? Are they actually, you know, doing what I want them to do with my donation? Is it actually being spent in the most efficient way? And some of those questions do really, you know, make you think about how do you better serve the industry?
Yeah, yeah, that's great. So for our audience that aren't familiar with Nuclevis, this is your last company. You're the CEO, founder. Tell us a little more about that. What do you guys do, and how do you help nonprofits?
So this is actually, we're going into our fourth year, and we provide mobile-first products to nonprofits that host peer-to-peer fundraising event programs. And so we have a white-labeled mobile app, and we also have a mobile texting platform. And we have about 90 programs that we support in both U.S., Canada, and Europe. And last year, we raised about $66 million for the nonprofits that we serve. So it's certainly really exciting to be able to see the impact that we can make on a day-to-day basis.
Wow, that's amazing. 90 customers, huh?
Yeah, it's actually grown a lot faster than I expected. One of those, you know, beautiful things about entrepreneurship, you have an idea and you're like, I think it's going to be this big. And then suddenly it becomes something much bigger than maybe you had initially envisioned.
But I think that's also a testament to your deep expertise and understanding of the problem, right? I think a lot of people start companies with a pretty vague idea, or, you know, it's not necessarily coming from deep insight of and expertise about what would make a difference. And you certainly are an expert in this area and have been for a long time.
Yeah, peer-to-peer is definitely a niche, right? There's general nonprofit fundraising, direct response, you know, which would be like end of year giving, Giving Tuesday, those types of campaigns. But peer-to-peer is such a niche. And essentially what it is organizations have their champions who are supporters of their cause, and they're asking them to fundraise. So the donors are actually indirect donors to the nonprofit. They're actually giving to their friend. Yeah. And so the relationship is really different. The organization has no relationship with a donor. It's indirect, and most likely that donor may likely not ever give again. But it's because they're, you know, this champion is the one asking their friends and family, because this is a cause that is so important to them and they have a why, whether it's, you know, heart disease, kidney failure, diabetes, cancer, you name it. You know, they're out there really raising awareness for these organizations because they have a deep connection to that cause and they're asking their friends and families for gifts. And so all of our solutions are really geared to how to make that champion or fundraiser as successful as possible.
Yeah, yeah. So to give an example, this might be someone that gets breast cancer, they join a race for breast cancer, and then they create a campaign to raise money for that. And you provide the solution to help them do that.
That's exactly right. And everything that we do is on the mobile side because, you know, almost 80% of today's traffic is actually coming from mobile devices. People are no longer visiting, you know, traditional websites just on desktops. And so how do you make that mobile experience as optimal as possible, increase engagement, and ensure that you're able to make that fundraising ask as easy as possible through channels that now they are using innately? QR codes, Instagram, TikTok, SMS, right? They're no longer sending emails. That is like 20 years ago. So if you provide channels that are no longer, you know, what people are doing in today's day and age, you're likely not to be very successful.
Yeah, makes sense. So exciting. So happy for all the success. So since this is part of Podcastathon, Let's end with how can people get involved with Mojo2, where to go to learn more, what does it look like if they want to donate or become a sponsor?
So you can visit our website, mojatu.org, mojatu.org. So Mojo2 means just one in Swahili. So the idea is you just need to help one person to make a difference in the world and leave a legacy of hope. And so there's many ways to be involved. You could be a volunteer and could be a mentor to a student going through university. You could be a pen pal and do letter writing and do video calls. And you could also donate. So we have different donation and giving opportunities, either sponsoring a student. We actually have a uniform campaign drive that we are promoting as we speak. We are trying to fund 150 uniforms for two children homes that we partner with, outfitting them head to toe with shoes and outfits so that when they go to school, they're proud of themselves and they feel like they belong. So we have several different opportunities that you could be involved with.
That's awesome. Are you still doing the gala, the annual?
We do a gala. Yes, it is going to be November 1st this year at the Ben Hur Shriner Center here off of Anderson Lane.
That's awesome. It's a great event. Really enjoyed that. Awesome. So any final parting words to other nonprofits or other startups? A lot of our audience are listening, you know, with interest in both, I think.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would say, you know, find what drives your passion. It could be education. It could be, you know, food banks. It could be, you know, mentoring a, you know, young person, like a brother, big brothers, big sisters type situation. Find your passion. It will absolutely fill a need in your heart, whether you're a volunteer, you're a sponsor, you're a donor, you're a board member. Life is about relationships and giving back. And the one thing that I've learned through Mojo2 is the more you give, the more you get. And so I would challenge everyone to find what your passion is and ensure that you're giving as much as you can, whether it's time, money, you know, building relationships, because you will find in your heart that you become a better person and the world gives back to you.
That's awesome. What a great message. Kathy, thank you so much for taking time on short notice and being part of the podcast. And best of luck in 2026 with everything that you do.
You got it. Thank you for inviting me. And I'm super grateful that we met. I think we had coffee maybe 10 plus years ago. And here we are today. So life is very serendipitous. And I do believe that things happen for a reason. So I'm glad that we met.
Same here. Thanks, Kathy.
All right. Thanks, Henrik.
All righty, this is Henrik Johansson again. Thank you so much for listening to Innovator Insights from Idea to Impact. If you are a successful product entrepreneur or you work in a company that creates new products and you have an interesting story about how you developed your product and brought it to market, and you would like to be on this podcast, please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, and you can fill out an application to be on the podcast. We'd love to hear from you. If you liked this podcast, you enjoyed this interview, and we would greatly appreciate if you would share it on social media. You can just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on socials. If you know anyone that you think would be a great guest, please tag them on social media and let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovator Insights. And would love to see your posts and any suggestions you have to guests. That's how we find most of our guests, from suggestion from other listeners. We're regularly putting out new episodes and new content to make sure you don't miss any episodes. Please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and to me and the team. We really appreciate it. Do you want to know more about Gemba, me, or the podcast? Please go to Gemba.com and click on podcast, or you can follow me on LinkedIn. That's where I do most of my posts. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Have a great day.